Pablo, you, I am late today. That's fair.
Yeah, you are. You're like 37 minutes late.
I made a mistake. I forgot that I changed my schedule this week, which is different from what you do. You always know that we should be here at 12, and then you show up at 12:15. It's more like a disrespectful, like, F you to me and everyone else. It's like, I get there when I get there.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Welcome to Highly Questionable. That's Israel Gutierrez. That's Dominique Foxworth. And one of them is very defensive in every possible sense of the word.
Who do you have more faith in tonight, LeBron or Steph?
So this game tonight is as excited for a game as I have been in a very long time. And I have to say, I had to think about this question that was asked. I usually dismiss such questions as false dichotomies, but in this one, I really had to think about it because I think it makes sense. This is like the preeminent rivalry in the NBA over the last decade or so. And the fact that I had to think whether Steph Curry might be the answer here is so insane, because think about this, right? The Lakers, we're not just the preseason NBA title favorites. They're not just the defending champs. They have one of the best defenses in the league. They have three guys they're going to throw at Steph Curry. Dennis Schroeder, who has guarded him more than anybody this season. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Alex Caruso. They're just going to throw bodies at Steph for this entire game. And I haven't even mentioned the fact that Anthony Davis also plays for the Lakers and that Steph Curry has nothing close to that. And also, I have also forgot to mention that LeBron James might be the greatest player in basketball history. So the fact that Steph Curry is in this conversation, because he's averaged 37 points a game since April, it is incredible. And yet the answer, of course, is still LeBron for me.
No, I think it's a fair question, because you're talking about LeBron James toward the end of his career and with an iffy ankle, and Steph Curry still in his prime and just going off. And I think, you know, for a one-game scenario, it's a fair question. Look, I'd like to sort of reassess or just look at again what the stakes are here. It's not that much, okay? It's one seeding spot and then an opportunity to play again. So many people are making this seem like this is for all, you know, for everything right here, and it's not for everything. And for that reason, I'm leaning towards Steph, is because it's more pressure for LeBron, whether he's the 7-8 seed or has to play for the 8 seed. The idea of the Lakers missing the playoffs after winning a championship is way more intense than the idea of the Warriors missing the playoffs, you know, losing the next game after that. They would have to, just to be clear, because I know a lot of people don't get the rules on the play-in. But if they lose again, would be out of the playoffs. I don't think people would be shocked, because going into the year, you thought, yeah, they're a fringe playoff team. And pressure-free Steph Curry in a one-game scenario, like, I am all about that. That dude could go off for 50 or 60 tonight the way Tatum did last night. And not only do I want to see it, I want to see more of this between him and LeBron. And I think Steph can bring that too, because when he does all the dancing and everything else, like, it's going to bring something out of LeBron. So even though there aren't a whole lot of high stakes, I believe Steph's going to bring, you know, obviously the shooting and probably going to score 40 plus, but he's going to bring the attitude. And
no high stakes.
You know, who I am not excited about? Izzy Gutierrez. Why would you be the opposite of a hype man? Like, we are excited for this game. We're going in. Everyone's excited, looking forward to it. And you found the only way possible to take the energy out of the room. Like, if you are Flavor Flav, the ultimate hype man, you are the antithesis. You are like Wario to Flavor Flav. You are wave a wave, and I hate you for it. And the obvious right answer to this question is Steph Curry.
Wave a wave?
Steph Curry, yeah, I mean, it's Wario. It's the opposite. It's Bizarro Flavor Flav. And he doesn't have a clock on his chest. What does he have on his chest? Just a sad face, maybe? I don't. What's the opposite of a clock? What's the opposite of time?
Well, is in this case today, it was an us and you.
How about he just give him an hour
late?
Well, the point is, the right answer to the question was who you're more excited about. Like, it's not who you have more faith in or who you have more confidence in. I'm more excited to see what Steph Curry's going to do tonight with no pressure on him and the green light. Like, I hope when he gets the opening tip, it goes to him and he just shoots it from half court just to set the tone. Like, he has no rules tonight. He is out there going, trying to score 75 points or 80. This is going to be fun. He might break a record or set a record tonight, and I can't wait. And you know LeBron wants nothing more than to snuff out any Steph Curry excitement, despite the fact that he said he was his MVP. We all know that LeBron wants to silence the idea that this is an actual rivalry, which Pablo seems to think it actually is. I don't see it that way. I think LeBron and Steph are not the same in that way, but I'm far more excited to see Steph tonight than I am LeBron.
So hold on. I was okay with you fighting back on Izzy, yucking your yum, as you like to say. Totally with you on that. But then you decided to yuck my yum, man. LeBron James, the whole thing about LeBron is that the reason he said that he thinks Steph is the MVP of the season is because he knows that he is a legitimate threat. That is LeBron James doing the very clever thing that he does because he knows how this business works of framing the problem that he has as so large that if he were to overcome it, he would then get even more credit. And he does that because he knows Steph is good, but also because I think he knows he's going to destroy him. Like LeBron James, when he showed... Izzy, you remember that series? I think it was like 2015 or 16 where LeBron James came out and he had no help and he basically went caveman ball.
The NBA Finals? Yes, I remember that series. It was the NBA Finals, Pablo.
He's going to do...
Between LeBron James and Steph Curry. I think everybody remembers that series.
J.R. Smith.
Okay.
I love him.
Should we praise Jason Tatum for dropping 50 or crush Russ for being a playoff choker again?
So there is the false dichotomy I came to know and love. So this is an absurd question, right? Like both things can all be true, et cetera, et cetera. But I will admit something here. I watched this game in the way that gets Mike Wilbon to yell at people like me, which is to say I was on my phone. I was kind of watching it. I was kind of not watching it, paying attention. It got kind of boring at the end because it was an 18-point loss for the Wizards. But at some point, someone mentioned that Jason Tatum had 50 points. And I had to like get on my phone and Google the box score because I did not realize that was happening. On the other hand, I very acutely knew that Russell Westbrook was not doing the thing that would get people to stop being mad at Russell Westbrook. And when it comes to Russell Westbrook, that second half is what is going to be haunting for him, I think. Even though he's not eliminated Israel Gutierrez, yes, we understand. He has a game now to play still because he has in the loser's bracket of the play-in tournament. But the fact that he had 6 points, zero assists, one rebound in the second half and seemed to, like, take his foot off the gas when the one thing we know Russell Westbrook to do is to put all feet possible on all possible gas pedals. That to me was not a good look for that dude.
Yeah, I mean, that was a rough look. I agree with you with the false dichotomy. You don't have to pick one, but it's hard to get on Russ because it's not an effort thing. Russ is trying. Russ is always going to be trying. The fact that it goes poorly, like, that makes me more sad than want to be critical of him. But Jason Tatum was fantastic. So I think we, whenever given the choice, you should take the opportunity to praise somebody, especially a young player who's on the incline on a team that has wildly underachieved. For him to step up in that moment, even though we know, I know, Izzy, we're going to get to you at some point. You're going to say how this game wasn't that big of a deal, but this was a higher pressure situation than regular season, and he stepped into it and played well. So, yes, let's praise him. And also, yes, let's upset Michael Wilbon. Exit velocity. Pablo, you know what I'm talking about.
Exit velocity.
No, Dominique, this was a huge game. No, it really wasn't. But look, I'll focus on Jason Tatum's side because really with Russell Westbrook, like you very rarely see him not be, you know, full foot on the gas pedal like Pablo said. So on the other side with Jason Tatum, obviously no Jaylen Brown, obviously an up and down season. He is that focal point and can do that. And, you know, I think I might have said a couple of times that the Wizards don't play defense. They've had a pretty good defense since the All-Star break, like top 10 defense since the All-Star break. Jason Tatum can get his against anybody. It doesn't matter. And if he had that type of game, he can have, you know, he can beat, again, any team. But the idea that everything was sort of at stake for Boston, right? They lose that game. It's going to be super stressful going into that next one. And if they're out of the playoffs, then you're talking about Danny Ainge probably losing his job, maybe even Brad Stevens. Now you're hearing reports that say Brad Stevens will definitely keep his job next year. And I don't think that being solid in the playoffs is just a small part of that. I think being in the playoffs is a huge part of that difference. And they're going to give him another try because he had those two seasons that were really close together. And it's hard to judge him that way.
Pretty high stakes out here saving entire jobs of GMs. And head coaches. Maybe the stakes are a little higher than we thought, Israel.
But on the injury thing, like, you do raise a good point, Izzy. At some point, we saw Russell Westbrook, I think with like 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, walk into the tunnel to the locker room. That's concerning. But that wasn't, of course, the most concerning injury of the game because Davis Bertans, I think, needs medical attention still.
The Brooklyn Nets, which is not a nice prize for winning the games.
Well, we don't know about the
got shot in the neck
of your screen.
Oh, look out.
This lets you know your standing on the team. This lets you know everything you need to know about how important you are to everybody else on that team. Not even thinking about a timeout. In fact,
spacing,
taking a shot.
Spacing the floor while being prostate. Prostrate, I should say.
Yeah.
Although his prostate may have also been injured along with his neck.
I mean, it wasn't like your typical out. Like, he's grabbing at his neck there, and it's just like, oh, you think, nah, just leave him here.
But what, I mean, I a serious question for you, for either of you, actually. Like, why not call a timeout in that situation? Like, I don't understand why you don't do something about it.
The answer is because everybody knew that Davis Bertans was absolutely faking it.
Up next on HQ.
If you want to find somebody fast, find somebody with thin calves and a donkey. They can run. You want to see?
Highly Questionable is brought to you by Delta Faucet. See what Delta can do. Do you question if White Sox players should be more upset at the Twins or Tony La Russa?
So it's been interesting to watch, like, what's it like to play for 76-year-old Tony La Russa? And this story starts 2 days ago. Let's go to that. So this is Yermin Mercedes, 3-0 pitch, 15-4 game. White Sox up big. La Tortuga surrendering a mammoth blast. And as you might know, that's not okay per the unwritten rules that 76-year-olds like Tony La Russa enjoy, as he then proceeded to explain.
He made a mistake. So, you know, there'll be a consequence that he has to endure here within our family. But it won't happen again because, you know, Joe will be on the lookout and I will be too. And we'll go running in front of the pitcher. We have to. Now, he's not going to do that again. I heard he said something like, I played my game. But no, he doesn't. He plays the game of Major League Baseball.
And they played another game yesterday in which this happened. Yermin Mercedes at the dish, a pitch thrown behind him, an ejection, and here was the post game.
I wasn't that suspicious. I'm suspicious somebody throws it to somebody's head. And they're not suspicious. So I don't have a problem with how the Twins handle that.
Yeah, I have a problem with the guy that I work for not at all, like, standing up for me in any way. Like, the Twins, you can be mad at them, sure, because they threw behind a guy, although that's, again, a very gentle version of this frontier justice that the unwritten rules tend to demand. But Tony La Russa just throwing the body of a dude who had been in the minor leagues, Yermin Mercedes, for a decade and is finally getting his shot and playing real well, being mad at that guy for trying to, you know, have a stronger case when arbitration comes along. Yes, I am mad at the 76-year-old.
That is so maddening. Like, first of all, I don't even know what consequences within our family means. Like, he's going to pull his pants down and spank him like he's a 5-year-old. Like, what the
he
hell does that mean?
That.
But then to just pretend, like, you're on the other team, pretend that there was no intent behind that pitch. Like, that would make me want to charge my own manager. And also, there was another, was it Tim Anderson who tweeted something like, hey, you do you.
Instagram,
just,
yes.
Like, something that's going to very much be a problem in this clubhouse. And yeah, Tony La Russa, this is where sort of the cluelessness comes to light.
Yeah, I mean, the cluelessness is one thing, but also looking clueless while being clueless. Like, he's just leaning back, looking like he has no interest in any of this. Like, that was the thing that I took it. Like, could you at least give us some body language? Every year we talk about how baseball is dying. So why would anyone in that situation then be encouraged to not continue to play hard in all situations? I will never understand why they continue to undercut themselves. And then in the offseason, they're going to be like, hey, let's hire someone else. Let's get another GM to come over here and figure out how to fix baseball and make it interesting again, while 80-year-old people are saying, let's hit people with balls.
But hold on. You arrived at a great point at the very top of your answer, Dominique, because Tony La Russa, man, sit up straight. Pull up your pants. You know, get your cap on right, man.
Yeah.
That is embarrassing.
Show some respect, La Russa, for the game.
Respect.
Do you question if Mike Davis has the most impressive quads in the NFL?
Yeah, I'm glad I get to go first on this because obviously I am the most knowledgeable person when it comes to the glory of the male physique on today's show. Mike Davis, running back, Atlanta Falcons. Let's see what he has. Okay. That is enormous. That is like my torso
like.
Onto one leg. I feel like we should not call those quadriceps. Like, we need a new name for those because that does not seem to represent any other quadriceps that I'm familiar with.
Are there eight muscles there? We go octoceps?
Not sextoceps.
Oh, no, we're skipping that. We're going octo.
You know what? I just learned this the other day. And so I had to sort of remind myself of this so I wouldn't feel ridiculously jealous. My chiropractor and physical therapist told me, hey, quads don't matter.
What?
There's always that. Yeah, because there's always that your quads are way stronger than your hamstrings.
Get
and
a so new if chiropractor. You just
strengthen your hamstrings, then you'll be fine. Like, your quads aren't even that important. I say that only to make myself feel better about this. But let's look at Saquon Barkley, shall we? Saquon Barkley has the most intimidating thighs you'll ever see. Didn't keep him from tearing an ACL, did it? Why? Quads too big, man. Quads are too big. Work on the backside. Work on that booty a little bit.
I love the sample size of one to intimidate to denigrate the quadricep. Like, yeah, the quads.
He's only got two ACLs.
Quads do matter quite a bit. And those, I mean, as someone who tore his ACL, the recovery is all about quad rehab. The quads are incredibly important. Fire your chiropractor. Booty's important too. You know, one thing that you'll find, if you want to find somebody fast, find somebody with thin calves and a donkey. They can run.
Mm.
You want to see?
Well.
Tonight at 8:07 p.m. Eastern, Cleveland and the Angels.
So Shohei Ohtani, man, like the patron saint of every Asian person who has ever lived. Somebody who is doing twice as much work as anyone else at the group project and is still not getting nearly enough credit for doing so. Do we have what he did last night? I mean, outer edge of the plate to dead center over the trees. He is leading the league in home runs, also leads the league in opposing batting average because, yes, he is also like one of the best pitchers in baseball. So, Dominique, please tell me you're intrigued.
I mean, I would be intrigued if we didn't have great play in basketball tonight, but generally, I am intrigued by Shohei Ohtani. Like, he's someone who I'm interested in. I accept your offer that maybe he's the patron saint of all Asian people, but, I mean, doing a lot more work for a lot less credit really sounds awfully black to me. I'm just saying.
I'm going to move the conversation along and say, yes, I am very much intrigued. I think Shohei also leads the league in face that says, look how hard I hit that ball, if you want to run that tape back, because that face was fantastic. But I want to go back to something Bomani said the other day about the Angels, and it was this. Why are you like this? Okay, because you're frustrating as heck when you've got Trout and Ohtani and still losing. And so maybe it's sort of reverse culture over there that now that Mike Trout's going to miss 6 to 8 weeks with a calf strain that he thought was an Achilles tear when it happened, maybe without him they'll start winning. Maybe that's going to happen and that we get a full Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani quality team when he comes back. Maybe.
So the Angels, obviously, like, just wildly disappointing, wasting all of this hard work. I want to return to litigating who's actually better represented in the spirit of Shohei Ohtani, though. Because to me, the fact that Shohei Ohtani is
away from that.
No, I'm going back in. Because to me, the fact is every parent can now point to Shohei Ohtani and be like, oh, you think you're the best player in the game, Mike Trout? You think you're good at baseball, Barry Bonds? Can you throw 102 miles an hour and strike out as many people as we've ever seen? Can you play two ways? No, then clearly you're not that good.
I'm just imagining the producers being so happy that Izzy was here to steer us away from where I led us, and then so frustrated that Pablo's like, let's get back over here.
And another thing.
Tonight on ESPN, Spurs and Grizzlies.
So the Spurs have, like, good young talent. The Grizzlies have Ja Morant. That's all really, like, legitimately interesting for basketball fans. I will simply point out that the Lakers-Warriors game is at 10 p.m. and that I have a small daughter, and so I'll probably be asleep for a lot of this game, but I will definitely be on the couch watching it, so put me halfway intrigued. Dominique, how about you?
I am absolutely intrigued in play-in basketball. I'm more intrigued about the evolution of Ja Morant. because Ja feels very Westbrookian to me. And it seems like we are starting to get to that point. Depending on what happens this season and maybe next season, we're going to get to that point where we turn on Ja Morant. Because right now we love Ja Morant. He's so exciting, he's so explosive, he's so fun. But he don't got no range on that jumper. And if that slows them down in the playoffs, everyone's going to turn on poor Ja Morant.
But we don't even need to wait for next season, Dominique. You said it. The stakes are here for that question tonight.
Yes.
Izzy, are you intrigued?
Hang on. I'm just going to go off here on Dominique for a second, who, by the way, if we recall, going back to the beginning of the show, was 39 minutes late to our taping because he forgot to be here and then called me like the anti-hype guy for just pointing out what's at stake between Lakers and Warriors. Pablo said he's going to be asleep during Lakers-Warriors, and you're saying Ja Morant should be questioned already? One of the most exciting young players in the league? Both of you, get the hell out of here.
I did. You're listening, sir, is off, because I didn't say he should be questioned. I said we're getting close to that point. I think it's going to happen to him at some
Russell
point.
Westbrook follows, MVP level? Is that what we're getting to? We're getting close to him being MVP level, triple-double every night? I'm so sorry that that's happening.
Also, Dominique was 37 minutes late.
Thank you, Pablo. Get it right.
Okay, that's highly questionable. We are off Thursday and Friday, so I would say you should rewind this show twice before the week is over. Feel good about yourself. That's Dominique Foxworth. That's Izzy Gutierrez. Find them across the network that we work for.
Dominique, he's lying. There's two shows tomorrow and Friday, and you're on both of them.
All right, can't wait. I'll be there 37 minutes late.